It's time for Inside LCC, an inside look at Lansing Community College's academic programs. We've got you covered with programs that nourish creativity and exploration, cultivate your purpose, and guide you to your career. Listen as we explore some of the opportunities at LCC and learn from conversations with faculty members, staff, and students.
Hello. I am Melissa Kaplan. I am the Arts Outreach Coordinator in the Arts and Sciences Division, and I am delighted to be hosting Inside LCC. And today in the studio, I have music faculty. We're going to talk about the LCC's wonderful music program. So with me today, I have
John Gwertz. I'm the lead faculty in the music program.
Thanks, John. And John is also the director of the LCC Jazz Band.
Jazz Band and the multi-instrumental ensemble.
Yeah, and who knows what else.
Yeah, right. Whatever needs to be done.
Absolutely, and doing it well. And also,
my name's Steve Simonson. I am an adjunct associate professor in music technology is my specialty.
And I know you also do a multitude of things here on campus.
Lots of different things, yes.
Yeah, and I will say something. I've been at LCC, I think you were here
25 years.
Yeah. And we started right about the same time, John. And the music program is continually, just as a quality program, and it draws students who are interested in being musicians, and it draws students who are interested in teaching, and it brings in the community. John, tell us a little bit about how this program has evolved and what distinguishes it from other ways that people interested in music might pursue it.
Well, I think one of the great things, as you already kind of just mentioned, is the community aspect, like with the jazz band. And all of our ensembles, we have a separate section for the class that community members can participate and take the class, and it won't be for credit, but it's a much cheaper rate. And so it's been great for the jazz band because I get students coming back every semester and I get a lot of consistency that way. And there's some amazing talent here in the area. And what's also great about it too is that these more seasoned members of the band often mentor the younger students that are coming through, the more traditional LCC students that are right out of high school and maybe never even played in a jazz band before, but they get the opportunity to play with these talented community members. So that's one of the great things about one of the things I love about the program.
Absolutely. I mean, in community college, It's all about that connection, serving the students who want to come and study, but then also, you know, building the relationships with the people who live here. And I think that's, you know, certainly with the jazz band, I've seen that over the years. There are musicians that are like other bands in town that once they're in, they're in.
They keep staying.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm just happy they do.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about the program itself. And I know there are a number of different tracks, but for somebody who really doesn't know much about it, how would you describe it and what are the different areas that people could pursue if they wanted to come here?
Yeah, absolutely. We have about four or five different music degrees. I don't know if I can name them all right now off the top of my head, but we have different degrees, like a music education / music therapy, pre-music therapy degree. So those students that are maybe coming right out of high school or wanting to pursue music education, but want to get some of those gen ed classes out of the way and get their feet wet here at LCC, they can do it for a much cheaper rate and then move on to a four-year school. We have a music industry degree, which is very popular, and that's a two-year track degree. That what music industry, as I try to explain it to students, is very diverse because it's a very broad term. So this encompasses the students that maybe want to learn about their instrument or their voice and get some experience playing in a group, and then just want to go right out and start performing in public, you know, around town, or like getting maybe even national or wherever they just want to take right off. But then it's also the students that maybe want to go into the business side and be a manager or an agent or along those lines, work in a record company. And then we have this music industry students that also want to go into recording. So it's a very broad degree. And that's the thing with music. Steve and I have talked about this a lot, is that it's a gigging economy.
Right.
I'm coining Steve's term there. you can make a career out of it, but a lot of times you have to piece things together, and you just have to be, as we've talked to the students about, you got to be reliable, you got to be responsible, on time, and you got to get the work done. And then people will see that, and you'll get more jobs that way, and never say no to anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe a few things. But it's interesting you mentioned some of those things that employers may consider soft skills. Mm-hmm. But those things, they translate
absolutely
to whatever field you're working in. Because music's a gig economy, you may have a day job. Maybe it'll be in music.
Right.
But it might be in something else. But nonetheless, what you're learning here in terms of teamwork, collaboration, responsibility, being on time, those things, they sound like a bunch of nice words, but they are incredibly meaningful for employers. Because if you can't bring that to a job, any kind of job, you're not going to be a good employee.
Right.
So music technology is one of the areas. And
so another one of our degrees is the music tech certificate, which has become really exciting. In the past couple of years, Steve and I took a lot of time and revamped the old degree, and now we brought back a few classes, added some other classes that weren't necessarily in our program but now are, and I really think that there's a lot of potential here there's a lot of interest in the area with this degree. And again, this is it's only a 1-year degree potentially, but it is also diverse in the sense that it could be for that person that just strictly wants to be in the studio, or maybe that's the person that wants to be out in the public and doing sound for concerts. Live sound production is really one of the classes that Steve teaches. So, we can let Steve talk a little bit more about some of those classes for sure.
Music technology is a nice fancy way of saying sound reinforcement, recording technologies, all that type of thing, because that's what we do. We deal with the technical part of it generally. We deal with making the performers be heard, essentially. And it runs everything from the mayor's going to cut a ribbon at an opening of a store downtown. They're going to have a couple of mics and a couple of speakers, no doubt, to, the large-scale concerts that you might see at Wharton or Breslin or Pine Knob or places like that. So we try and focus on giving our students the basic foundations of that so they can then start to compete with the other people in the industry and other people in town here. There's a need for it in town, quite frankly. I'm sure there's lots of folks out there listening, watching whatever, that have been to a show, and it's like, why did that sound so bad? And it happens. It does. And there's a lot that goes into it. But the more that we can educate our students, not only on the foundational aspects of the technology and all of the hertzes and amplifiers and, I'm making up words now, but, that type of stuff, then they can relax and do what they do. Because I always counsel my students that what you're doing is you're performing on your instrument the same way the performer on stage is. If you miss your cue, if you blow a line, if you don't push the button right, if you haven't got things properly gained staged and you get a bunch of feedback, nobody has a nice day or a nice experience. So you really want to make sure that you are able to get it set up, make it operate as efficiently as possible, but also be ready and flexible to react to changes, just like a performer. If you're an actor on stage and somebody blows a line, what do you do? Oh, stop, let's go back to line 15. You can't do that. You have to improvise and think on your feet. And it's also a very heavily involved sort of a crew type of job in a lot of ways. A lot of times as a sound engineer, I'm kind of a lone wolf. I'm out there often by myself. That's kind of how the industry, especially at a smaller scale, can operate. But larger shows, there's tens of people involved in just the sound part, let alone the lighting, the electrical work, the carpentry work that goes into putting on the stage, as well as the musicians. And all of those people have to be coordinated and working together. And all of those soft skills that we were talking about become incredibly important, because nobody wants to work with a jerk, I mean, you have to be very, aware of how you're working with other people, and you know, you're in a service business is really what it comes down to.
Absolutely, you and know. I love how you describe it, and as they're on stage too, and very much everybody has their cues, everybody has their role to play.
Exactly.
And again, people who aren't necessarily familiar with performance and of any kind, you know, you're focused on what you're seeing on stage or what you're hearing, you know, the instrumentals. You don't think about necessarily people backstage, but they're magicians in a way too, and so absolutely essential. I think it's incredibly marvelous that people can pursue so many different aspects of music here at LCC. I mean, for a community college, for a relatively small program, how many faculty are in the program?
Ooh.
So I do want to mention that in addition to the classes and the ensembles, if people are interested in specializing in a particular instrument, yeah, they can study here with professionals.
Yeah, we have professionals like Ed Fidawa that plays with the Lansing Symphony, teaching bass here, people that are not only teaching here but other areas, colleges and music programs, and performing quite frequently in the area.
Absolutely. So we have a wonderful faculty who have, you know, a lot of depth of performance experience as professionals in symphonies and in bands. I know you, John, you are in multiple bands.
Yeah.
And there's always a gig, yeah, on the horizon.
So I said, don't say no.
Yeah, yeah. But it really, I think that is incredibly important too for people considering to come here, to know that the faculty that they're going to be studying with are current and doing this.
We're and living it.
Yeah, you're living it.
We
you're
are
living.
Practicing our craft.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So tell me a little bit about the different music ensembles.
Sure. Currently, we have four music ensembles, the jazz band, which we talked about. We have the concert choir, which if anyone is interested, we would love to have you be a part of.
And it's a wonderful group. Nada Radakovich is the director of that. And she brings those voices together.
She sure does. Yeah, she does a wonderful job. And the students really relate to her too.
Mm-hmm.
They really love working with her. We have the rock band. And that's just a great class. At the end of every semester, they put on the performance at the Avenue, or they've done it at Max Bar too. I think lately it's been at the Avenue. Chris Rollins directs that group, and he does a wonderful job with them. It's amazing, because I just realized with him, he was telling me that all the music that they do from day one, the students bring the music. He doesn't
program it.
Yeah, he doesn't program it like I do with the jazz band. I come into the semester bringing the music to the students. The students bring the music to him, and then he has to figure out what to do with all that music and then teach it back to them. So he does and he gets two sets worth of music out of these students. Some of them have never really played in a band or played their instrument that much.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And I know with jazz band, that is the one ensemble that's auditioned all the other ensembles, multi-instrumental jazz band or rock band and choir. They're open to anybody,
correct,
no matter what level of experience. Mm-hmm. And then the director finds a place. And so with rock band, you don't know until the beginning of the semester,
right,
what the makeup is going to be. You might have, you know, usually you have multiple guitarists, but, you know, and a few drummers, but mm-hmm, you never know. There might be a flute player, and there might be a couple vocalists, there mm-hmm could be, you know, whatever.
And he's had a violin player.
Yeah, we had a violin player last semester, so.
That's great.
Yeah.
And being at the Avenue, they used to perform at DART, which is fine. DART is a great place mm-hmm to hear music, but rock band at the Avenue, which is a venue that is on Michigan Avenue on the east side, everybody has a good time. I've gone to their concerts or performances, and parents are having a great time mm-hmm watching their kids, really proud of their kids in this cool environment with great lighting. It's like the perfect mix or match.
Yeah, I think they found their home there.
Yeah, it's very much the environment that these students will be performing in after they graduate.
Exactly.
You know, they will be trying to find jobs in bars and putting together demo tapes. Nobody uses a tape anymore, but you know what I mean? And little biography, headshots, all that type of stuff. And then going and selling themselves to the bars, to the wedding clients, to other folks who might need their services. And I think that that is a really great reason to have it there, because it puts them in the environment that they're going to be in. And you have to learn how to work in the environment you're going to work in, I suppose.
Well, yeah. I think that's, you know, that's ideal to not have it all be theory or all in a, you know, just I shouldn't say just a college facility, because our facilities are used by the community too, and they're really wonderful facilities with great staff.
The other ensemble is it's brand new. Well, it's not brand new. It's been on our books for a while, but we had several years of low attendance in it, or it just didn't have enough students to make it run. But in the last couple years, I've been getting a lot of interest in the jazz band. And again, the jazz band's been playing out in the community and been trying to do as much as I can to promote the
group. You go to high schools and festivals.
Yes, and all around. And we're starting to, I feel like, make a little bit of a name for ourselves, and it's garnering a lot of interest. And so I've been getting calls and emails about wanting to be in the band, and the reason why we do have the audition for the band is because it's a very specific instrumentation, and so a jazz band typically has saxophones, five saxophones, four trombones, four trumpets, and a rhythm section, which, you know, bass, piano, drums, guitar, and then outside of that, the rest of those, any other instrument wouldn't be considered a typical instrument for,
like the violin.
Yeah, but we can make it work. Sure. In fact, we do have a violinist this past year, and we're able to make that work for them. But I need to kind of know that going into the semester, like who I'm dealing with, so I can properly prepare them for success in the class. And so with the extra saxophone players, extra trumpet players, extra guitarists that want to pursue jazz, but we don't have enough room for them, I thought, well, why don't we get this multi-instrumental class going again? And it was really successful last semester. I was really proud of them. Like, we had it capped off at 18. I think we had 16 people in the group.
Nice.
And it were very diverse kind of instrumentation, like four guitar players. We had a violinist, at least at the beginning of the semester, trumpet, couple trombones, sax, and I kind of did a little bit of a mix of approach between the jazz band and the rock band, where I started them off, and we focused a lot on improvisation, and then I provided some music for them, and then they came back with some of the music that they wanted to do. I think we're going to kind of explore that a little bit more this coming semester, and they're really creative. It's been a lot of fun.
That's tremendous. And, you know, one of the great things about the program that I've seen over the years is that there's fluidity and there's flexibility. I mean, the basics are always there. You're always going to be offering rudiments of music, for example. Mm-hmm. But music technology has come in. The ensembles, there was an experimental ensemble at one point. There was a vocal pop and jazz ensemble at one point. But it's a program that does not stand still, and it shouldn't, because, you know, you want to respond to community interests, you want to respond to student interests, and then, you know, changing technology and such. Mm-hmm. I want to, we just have a couple more minutes, and so I want to briefly get a sense of what some of our LCC music graduates have gone on to do.
Well, sure. Several of them have gone on to Michigan State and continued their education there. There's several LCC grads in the Lansing area playing music. I play with them all the time.
That's
several
great.
Of them. And that's really cool to see. We've had students not only just MSU, but move on to other four-year schools.
We like have CMU, I think. CMU, even Berklee School of Music.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Out East.
We have that 3-in-1 program, the enhanced program degree, that getting an industry degree and then switching to the enhanced degree on your third year. After that, you go to Ferris for one more year, and you get a bachelor's degree in music business.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so you can take care of 3 out of those 4 years just here, and then your last year is at Ferris, and you get the bachelor's degree.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice, because here, you know, certainly we are aware of tuition differences, cost differences, and then all kinds of wonderful programs that exist for tuition coverage these days with community colleges, but also the attention that you get here at LCC with smaller classes and faculty that just you advise the students. You are not only the lead of the program, but you're the advisor. And Steve, I'm sure in your role, you're all advising, you're all guiding the students. And so some really, you know, you really build the relationships with, with students. So
yeah, it's really cool. I mean, another time I've seen students is at a festival where I'm getting ready to play, and then I see a student working sound.
We've got several of them out there doing it. Some of our students have gone on to, one of them is basically the lead technological manager down at, I think it's the, it's one of the big casinos down down by Indiana or something. I'm really blanking on the name of it now. Another one of our graduates has just recently assumed a position as the lead house audio tech at the Wharton Center. We've got a lot of people who just work around town, gigging, you know? Basically, I've got a chance for you to do some sound. I know you work over here. I know you work over here. What are you doing next Wednesday? Type of a thing.
Right.
So there, our people are out there quite a bit. It's difficult to break into it. It really is. You have to, you know, prove yourself, essentially. You have to show up ready to go and be there and perform, do your thing. Otherwise, you're not going to get called back. And so that's what I really try to emphasize with my students is those soft skills. We are in a service business. How much more of this vocal do you want in your monitor? All those things down to how many mics, all that stuff. So we have to be very conscious of making our clients happy. Otherwise, you don't work again.
Yeah. And both of you, and I know some of the other faculty, Chris Rollins, Tom Jones, who also teaches music technology, and then all the pros that give the lessons, contacts, have connections. And so I know you work that for students too. I am going to include in the show notes information on how to get in touch with both of you guys, John Gewirtz and Steve Simonson, so that our listeners who are interested can follow up. And I'm also going to include a link to LCC's webpage and our Facebook, because there are always events coming up that open to the community. Everything is free, often here on campus, much of it here on campus. And, you know, whether you're interested in pursuing music and want to learn more and come and hear something, or you want to be in the audience, or as John, as you mentioned, our ensembles are all open to students in any major as well as to the community. And you sign up for a non-credit and you get a lower rate, and you're basically kind of auditing it, so you're not worried about getting a grade. But it makes a great mix. I think we could talk for another 25 minutes.
without a problem.
But I thank you both very much for being here. Steve Simonson.
Thank you.
John Gewirtz.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, great conversation. Yeah, and thank you all for listening. I'm Melissa Kaplan, and this is Inside LCC.
This has been Inside LCC. If there's a specific degree and program you want to hear more about, let us know by contacting us at lccconnect.org. Thanks for taking a listen. Inside LCC.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect. Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Every year, the Dental Hygiene Clinic at Lansing Community College provides essential services to people in the mid-Michigan community. Open to the public, the clinic is led by a licensed dental faculty and provides a platform for LCC dental students with the opportunity to hone their dental hygiene skills. Associated fees apply to clinic services. To find more information, visit lcc.edu/dentalclinic.
Keep yourself connected with what's happening in mid-Michigan by joining us for Community Convos, a show from LCC Connect, where we talk with the people who put the festive in our festivals and those that give traction to our attractions. Find out who's on the convo and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Stephen Cook, president of the Michigan Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students in Michigan. One caring adult can make all the difference. Take the pledge to be that adult at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
A message from the Michigan Education Association.
Lansing Community College's School of Business incorporates areas of study including marketing, insurance, management, and more. Transfer options and direct degree options are both available depending on the area of study. To find out more about LCC's business programs, visit lcc.edu.
LCC. Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Bob Myers from the Historical Society of Michigan with a Michigan History Moment. Belle Nash and her husband, Theodore, were looking forward to a long-delayed European honeymoon. Belle, a native of Charlotte, Michigan, had taught school in Battle Creek and Detroit. In 1911, at the age of 45, she married Theodore, a civil engineer who had come to Detroit on business. The newlyweds moved to Kansas City, Missouri. In 1915, they bought tickets to Europe aboard the Cunard liner RMS Lusitania. The Nashes were two of several Michiganders who boarded the liner for the journey to England. Others included Frederick Milford, an insurance agent from Hancock, Ralph McCready, a Battle Creek physician, and Scott Turner, a mining engineer and graduate of Michigan Tech. World War I had broken out, and German submarines were torpedoing British vessels in the Atlantic. The German embassy in New York placed a notice in 50 U.S. newspapers warning people against traveling on British ships. Theodore Nash read the notice, but dismissed it. Were it official, he decided, the American authorities would send American passengers a warning before they sailed. The Lusitania enjoyed a smooth and uneventful crossing. As the liner neared the Irish coast, Belle was surprised to see the crew swinging out the lifeboats. Captain William Turner assured worried passengers that the Lusitania would soon be protected by escort ships from the Royal Navy. On the afternoon of May 7th, the German submarine U-20 fired a torpedo that slammed into the Lusitania's starboard side. Seconds later, a secondary explosion rocked the ship. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes. The crew only managed to launch six of her 48 lifeboats. Belle and Theodore had tied on lifebelts, and both went into the water when the liner sank. Belle was submerged in the icy cold water, but another passenger pulled her aboard an overturned lifeboat. Later, she was taken aboard a fishing trawler. Theodore was gone. Belle remained in Ireland for months in hope of recovering her husband's body, but it was never found. Of the 761 rescued passengers, seven were from Michigan, including Belle Nash, Frederick Milford, and Ralph McCready. Belle Nash devoted the rest of her life to philanthropy. In 1926, she donated land and cash to create Camp Nash, a Boy Scout camp near Edwardsville, Kansas. She died in 1950 at the age of 95. This Michigan History Moment was brought to you by MichiganHistoryMagazine.org.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's dual enrollment program offers the opportunity for qualified high school students to earn college credit while working towards their high school diploma. Dual enrollment lets students receive educational advancement in areas where the student's interest is displayed, especially in courses and academic areas not available in the student's high school. To find out more information about dual enrollment, visit lcc.edu.
Thank you for listening to LCC Connect. I'm Paul Schwartz, and I host a show called The Safety Plan. The Safety Plan is about the latest cyber scams and how to avoid them. You can catch The Safety Plan here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
Why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Having trouble finding Connor's middle school? Would you like directions?
No, why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with him over homework.
Home, walk, restaurant. Need a review?
No, I need help. He's very smart, but his mind wanders. He's disorganized.
I think I understand.
Oh, good.
Finding best potatoes for French fries.
No!
Russet, fingerling, Yukon gold.
Why don't you understand me?
Sorry, I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Frustrating, isn't it? Redirecting to understood.org.
For the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues, this is what life can feel like. Explore understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues, designed to help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
The Lansing Community College Foundation provides scholarships that make education possible, change students' lives, and uplift our community. Students may apply for scholarships November 1st through January 31st. Learn more at lcc.edu/scholarships.
LCC. Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Welcome to the Sociological POV.
This podcast emerged from some fascinating discussions
in an introductory sociology course
at Lansing Community College,
where we attempt to gain insight
into other people's perspectives,
the good,
the bad,
and the world around us.
We hope to mirror that concept with this podcast
as we welcome a range of voices from diverse backgrounds
to share their thoughts on a current event
or topic that matters.
So with that said,
let's get into it
and start gaining perspective.
All right. Welcome back, guys. I'm so glad we're all here. And we're going to be talking about social interaction and how the COVID pandemic changed that. That's what we're talking about today. And social interaction is something important and looked at in sociology because it's how you exchange culture and it's how you maintain a social structure. So here's your little lecture for today. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to ask you guys is, how did your social interaction change once the pandemic started?
So when the pandemic started for me, I think I was in like eighth grade year, or I was about to go into my freshman year of high school. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I had like a lot of friends. Like, I just started making friends after being the weird kid for like 3 years. And I was like so excited. And I was like, we can just hang out all throughout this 2 weeks. And then as soon as like it just like actually like started happening, like we were like quarantined and everything, they all stopped talking to me and I just had no friends, right? But like this was like the age where it's like my, like I had my own phone and like I was kind of growing into like not my womanhood, but like I was kind of growing into like myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there was a bunch of apps on, I don't even know, like there was an app called Wiz, right? And so it's like basically Tinder for kids. Okay. Huh. And that's how, back then, that's not how I saw it. But now that I'm looking back at it, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you'd go on this app and like, you'd just be swiping left and right on people to like become friends with them. Right. But like a lot of the times I found myself in situations where it's like, I was like 13, 14 talking to like 19 year olds. Huh. And those were my friends because I had no other friends.
And it was all virtual. Like,
yeah, I never met them or anything like that. But like now looking back, it's super weird. But in that moment, I was like, oh, it's not weird. They just want to be friends. You know.
So it was pretty quick going from having all these friends in person to only being online and having friends only online.
Yes.
Wow. That is a big change. Yeah. What about you, Eric?
So it was
before quarantine, I was in college here in LCC learning English. And most of my friends were international students. I didn't have local friends, like born and raised mm-hmm. Michiganders.
Mm-hmm.
So when quarantine came, most of my friends just flew away to their countries because it was like mm-hmm. it's online classes. And I was like, what do I do now?
And you stayed here?
Yeah, I stayed here.
Okay.
I moved with my aunt, so it was a house all day, every day, just working. But I didn't make friends at my work because they were most old people. It was okay. It was just a normal relationship. It wasn't like close mm-hmm. friends, like friends to hang out or do things. But at some point, it felt comfortable, like not talking that much with people, just playing video games at night or with your... I used to play video games with my friends from Peru. Like it was just mm-hmm. like an online interaction every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, a whole, what, year? 9 months? 11 mm-hmm. months? Until, yeah, we had to go back to normality. And it was hard. Like, I didn't know what to say to people. Mm-hmm. And I think my English was even more broken than now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ashamed or shy to speak openly.
Mm-hmm.
First, because the social normal interaction, and second, because of my English. It was like, no.
Gotcha.
So okay. those two factors were like,
yeah,
very important.
And that was coming back from kind of the isolation
yeah.
where we started interacting with more people.
Yeah, yeah. And okay. it was very, very comfortable for me to not to talk mm-hmm. with people, just silence and watch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you started meeting more people as we started coming back to in person?
Not really. I was very like hard to go back.
Mm-hmm.
So I would maintain my introvert.
You kept with the yeah. isolated. Yeah. Okay.
So actually just last semester when we met that, it was starting to openly be more social.
Okay.
Yeah. You sat next to me in class and I was like, hey. Or I sat next to you or something. I don't know. I might have forced that friendship.
That was a coincidence.
I might have forced that friendship, but.
Because when I saw she sat at the same seat, I was like.
I was like, hey.
I didn't see her. But yeah.
Okay.
So it was like after COVID, like three years. Like
yeah.
Just being
yeah.
away mm-hmm. from.
Yeah, because it was easier.
It was easier.
Yeah. Well,
but
that
makes
sense.
Being easier, it doesn't mean that it was good. It felt bad.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
You didn't want it to be that way?
Not really, but it was easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. How about you when we came back in person?
I feel like when we came back in person, I kind of had like a whole new friend group. And because it's like as like freshman year started. Or not freshman year, sophomore year started, or whatever year I went back, okay, early high school,
mm-hmm.
I started becoming friends with my friend Gabby and then my friend Isla, and then I fell into like their friend group and I instantly gained like 5 friends. And those friends have been my friends even to this day, like I'm living with them right now. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think I got really lucky in that sense that all of my old friends kind of ditched me. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I was able to find an amazing friend group. But I feel like coming back from COVID, I started masking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wasn't being my normal self. I was kind of like, I was trying to fit in. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted people to think that I was like them so I could fit into their group. And that took me like 2 years to like fully get out of and be comfortable around my friends. But now I feel like I'm at a point where like, I really don't care how people see me. You know, if you like me, you're going to like me. If you don't like me, I don't care,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like, why would I want that energy in my life? But back mm-hmm. then it was just like, it was totally different. I was a completely different person.
Before COVID?
Before COVID, during COVID, like I've been yeah. so many different people.
Yeah. Do you think the pandemic, like that, especially that year of not being in person, do you think that had an impact on who you are now? Or do you think it would have happened either way?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's like during that time, I got into like an online relationship with a guy, right? And that completely like messed up my whole everything about what a relationship was supposed to be like. And like, because of the age difference too. Because like I said, I was talking to like 19-year-olds, you know? So it's like, I was really going through it. And so it's like, I feel like if I wouldn't have gone through that time, I wouldn't be as maybe open and accepting as I am now
mm-hmm.
because I had to go through like those hardships. Now I'm able to understand like what other people go through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
What about you, Eric? Do you feel like you kept some of the qualities that you had before the pandemic, or is there anything you're keeping because you, like a trait you picked up? Maybe some of the introspectiveness you have comes from sitting back and being quiet.
I like to observe.
Yeah. Was that before as well, before the pandemic?
No, before pandemic, I think I was pretty normal, very regular in my social interactions, like just like, hi, how are you, how's it going? Just a normal, regular social classmate interaction, just like that, or people from work just chatting about whatever is going on. But then you just felt comfortable just to be in silence, and that was it. And either way, I didn't get, like, I didn't accomplish to fit into the society here or the different societies here. So I was like, I won't try either way. I was just going to be myself.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So it kind of did help you become more introspective a little bit. It seems like the pandemic, like you're more like observing things. You got comfortable kind of sitting back and observing.
Yeah. I observe a lot, and then I decide if I wanted to join or not. Or if I wanted to talk or not, or if I wanted the person to be my friend or not.
Yeah.
And that helps me too with the major I have, journalism. I just observe and just...
Yeah.
People, when somebody does not talk, they don't realize somebody's there watching or something. It's kind of funny sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Adelina, do you think, like, your experience of... now not really caring and just being who you are, do you think that helps you connect with the sociology, anthropology stuff that we've been learning about?
Oh, yeah, because I feel like I'm a very open, accepting person. Like, you can tell me whatever you want. You can have whatever belief that you want. You can be whoever you are, because I feel like I want to know what's going on. You know, I want to know why people are the way they are. I want to know why they're interacting with other people the way that they are. And I want to know, like, kind of like what they're thinking almost. So I feel like I've always had that interest. And especially since, like, my best friend, Dakota, she just got her psych degree at MSU. So she's very, like, introspective. Like, she knows everything. It's crazy. It's just, I find that stuff so interesting. You know, it's like all the research that we did, the movies that we watched, and like different people that we learned about, like the different groups around the world that we learned about. That was super interesting, because it's like, it just like, it makes sense to them. And that's crazy. You know, it's like the way that they live, it just makes sense to them. And the way that we live makes sense to us. And it's just like, it's just so crazy how we're all able to live like different lives.
Yeah. Cool. So we're going to connect this to education, because that's where we all are, is at LCC. That's how we met too at school. So how do you think the pandemic affected your learning experience overall?
It made it harder.
It made it harder.
At least for me.
Okay.
Because since I don't make that much friends on my classes.
Okay.
It's hard to catch up what's going on when I'm missing something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have just this semester in my geology class, I didn't make any friends.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, because there was a whole line when just the first day, the whole group, different group, they just met that day, and they became best friends that day.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I wanted to be there.
Yeah.
But I was too shy to reach them. Like,
But what about interacting with the teacher? Because that's something I noticed that changed during the pandemic and then has stayed the same, is that students are much more reluctant to reach out and talk to the teacher.
My teacher was an old man, like a very, how would I say, like a very normal, formal old teacher, old male teacher, like very, there was a distance between teacher and
student.
It was
hard to reach.
Not hard to reach. He was very open to reach, but everything was just chill, just normal, nothing special. I mean, if I had a question, he would answer if I sent him. It was the same talking to him or sending an email, like, at least for me.
Okay.
Because I realized some other students were more openly to talk because they were in the same field studying.
Okay.
So that also is a help, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my thing. When I was missing something from classes, they didn't know how to reach out. Like,
Yeah, well, I that's what I feel like, is students aren't thinking, oh, okay, I missed something, I need to reach out. Who do I reach out to? Oh, I'll reach out to my teacher.
Yeah. And also from our class, from anthropology, there was one classmate from the first day, and she asked me my number to exchange information from class. I was like, why? Why do you need my number? But it was, I realized it was very, very normal to ask like numbers. Hey, can I have your number to just exchange information from classes, blah, blah, blah.
So that's normal now. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But for me that day was like...
I think that's more normal now than it was before the pandemic to reach out and work with other students. And it's less normal to communicate with a teacher, which I think is interesting. It's almost like a push away from interacting with the teacher, the authority, or...
I feel like that's because, like, for me personally, I don't like having to, like, email teachers. I don't really check. Okay. I don't check my email that often. Mm-hmm. I text a lot, or it's like Snapchat, any social media platform, really. Mm-hmm. So it's like being able to exchange that information with a student. It's like a quick, like, oh, I'm seeing it pop up my phone. I'm seeing a notification. I can respond right away.
Oh, okay.
But like with like the teacher, it's like you have to go through the hassle of emailing them, and it has to be all formal. Mm-hmm. And then it's like on top of that, you don't even know if they're going to respond. Like my sociology teacher, she didn't respond for like 2 weeks when I asked her a question.
Okay.
And like that class is completely online.
Yeah.
You know. So it's like, I don't want to email her again. I don't want to bug her. I don't want to become like a bad student. So I'm just going to wait. But then it's like, that question doesn't even matter anymore. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
I feel like it's a lot easier like in person. I usually like stay after and I'll ask you a question or like whatever questions I like build up in class. I'll write them like in a corner on my note page or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it's just online. It's so much harder.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So definitely hearing the immediate response is more normal now. And that's the technology piece.
Oh, yeah. Another thing of my...
Yeah.
What is this? Social anxiety?
Anxiety?
Social
okay,
anxiety?
Yeah.
He said, I don't like to see immediate responses. That's what I like emailing. When somebody's calling, I'm like, no.
Oh, okay. So that translates into the virtual world.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. I just got that from Kobe, maybe. Because everything was emailing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Email, and I just got that. Like, I feel comfortable emailing people.
You don't want the pressure of having to respond right away. But that's good,
because I like to think, right. Unless it's something short, like with a friend, where are you, blah, 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 something like that.
Okay, so that is an interesting thing. So now it's like more normal to respond quicker, and you're not in person, so you're thinking less about their response to things. Do you guys notice anything with that?
I have kind of, because I feel like with my roommates, especially, like, they're way more confrontational over text, like, way more. And it's like they're scared to do it in person. And I'm a very, like, I'm a very outgoing person. If I have something that I need to say to you, I'm going to say it and I'm going to be polite about it. Like, I'm not going to be rude and I don't want to argue ever. But, like, they will never, ever bring an argument to my face. They will always text it to me. And I'm like, can we just talk about this in person? Because it's like, you can take a text message a million different ways. Like there's a million different tones you can use. And so like, they'll be like, no, can we just text about it? No, we're adults. We're living together. We're moved out of our house. We're going to college. We need to have this discussion in person. Because what are you going to do when you go out into the real world and you can't talk to your colleague or your boss? Like, you need to be able to do this.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, it depends on the person who are you interacting with. That also.
Yeah.
If I have to talk something important with somebody close, then I'll have to face it. But if it's like classmates, coworkers, even my boss, like, nah, just email me.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. This is all very helpful for my
teaching. Yeah, in my case, it depends who I feel more comfortable with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you think that overall people are back to socializing the way that we used to? Like, what's changed permanently in our culture because of the pandemic in terms of socializing?
I have noticed one thing, which I wasn't necessarily like, I didn't get this end of it, but I feel like people don't ask other people for their numbers in social settings. Like, imagine, I'm not old enough, but I'm at a bar, okay? Mm-hmm. And a guy's not gonna come up and ask me for my phone number because they're too scared, you know? Or just like you're out and about with your friends. Like that just doesn't happen anymore as much as it used to, or at least I think. Because it's like I was too young to get my number asked for before COVID, obviously. But but like I feel like nobody does it anymore. You know, like nobody's like, hey, you're really pretty. Like I wanna go out with you. Like it just doesn't happen. It's like it's all online dating apps. It's all like virtual, you know? And then it's just like people, but it's also like, I feel like it's a trust thing too, because I feel like there's so much going on in the media with like serial killers and like murderers. And like, I feel like if a man were to come up to me and be like, hey, what's your number? I'd be like, no, leave me alone.
So you recognize that it would be uncomfortable, even though the ideal would be that someone is comfortable enough to come up.
Yeah.
There's still this lack of trust on the other end.
Yeah, like I want it. It could also just be a personal thing because I'm terrified of people like killing me. But I don't know if that's a...
That's another podcast. Yeah.
But like, I don't know. It's just like, I want it to happen. But then it's like when it does happen, I'm like, ooh, no. Uh-huh. And I just walk away, you know?
Right, right. Well, I think that goes back to the uncomfortableness that we all have about just coming up, talking to people. Like you said, your roommates won't even have conversation. I think that is really normal. What do you think? Is that pretty normal for people to interact virtually instead, even when it comes to meeting someone new or people that you know really well and you've got to have a discussion? Do you see like a lot more virtual conversations instead of...
I would say yes and no.
Okay.
Because I've seen that, like, I divide it into groups, like the extroverts and the introverts. And
okay.
Let's say I've noticed that the extroverts have turned more extroverts. Like, they want to interact more and more and more, but the introverts are more isolated. Like me.
Okay.
And I realize more of my close friends are more another introvert too. And there is one extrovert who is my close friend, but sometimes he's very uncomfortable. Like, he's too extroverted, which is fine. I mean, it's the way he is and it's the way I am, but it's always, we share a lot of things in common and that's why we are friends. But sometimes it's like too much, like real chill out. But with my introvert friends, it's more, we are more comfortable and we interact more between each other. Like, we are not like introverts anymore. We're like, we are more comfortable to talk and share everything.
So it kind of played off of personalities that already existed.
Yeah.
I made them. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's what I have seen.
Yeah. Interesting. And then what could we do to change some of these things that we're talking about? Not that these are bad things necessarily, but making people more comfortable with others coming up. And we talked about this last time, like you were saying, you're an introvert, but you want to interact more on campus. So if we're talking about people being less likely to do that because we're used to staying at home, we're used to texting, how can we help people interact more and become more comfortable communicating? Because I know from the teacher end, I would love to see more people getting involved in stuff here, communicating with me about problems they're having with the class. I would love that because I think that all comes out in the end.
I feel like it all, like, it kind of stems from, like, just, I don't want to say laziness or getting used to not having to do anything, but I think it stems from that because it's like when COVID happened for me, I didn't do any sports. I laid in bed all day. When I went to my Zoom classes, I would mute myself and go to sleep. Like, I didn't do anything, right? Like, I completely failed my freshman year, right? So, like, it's just kind of like, I feel like it just, people haven't gotten out of that bad habit yet of, hey, you need to social network. Like, this is your life. Like, you're building yourself up from here. Like, this is your future, kind of. You know what I mean? And, like, I feel like I've kind of helped myself get out of that by just doing it. You know, like, in class, I want to say at the beginning of the semester, when we did our group discussions, I wouldn't really talk. I would kind of just list my answers and then have the next person go. But towards the end, we would run out of stuff to say. And I'd just be like, so, how's your guys' day going? You guys like that weather? You know, just like starting to talk about like actual stuff. Or like some girl was talking about ASL because that was like, we were doing that like language stuff. And I was like, so like, why do you like ASL? Like, what's so interesting about it for you? You know, like, do you have a family member that's, you know, that has to learn sign language? Whatever. And so it's kind of like a... I just force myself to do it because it's like if I didn't force myself to do anything, I would be like an introvert because at heart I am. I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to isolate myself in my bed, but I know that that's not healthy for me. So I have to force myself out of it like every once in a while, like every once in a like couple months. Like you saw, I didn't come to class for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an issue. But then I forced myself out of it.
Good for you. So what about social networking? Like, I think that we try and pretend like it's not important because we have our phone to go back to now. And we got, like you're saying, you were saying we got used to not doing so much. But social networking is pretty important. It, extrovert or introvert, like, it benefits you.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I'm very bad doing social networking. Especially when, how would I say, I mean, having the right contacts.
Okay.
Helps you to reach nice, good places, good jobs, good opportunities. And I don't know how to make a nice interaction with just saying, hey, give me your number. I just need a good place, a nice place where you are. Or, I don't know, you're going to help in my curriculum, so I need you. I don't know how to change that or to make it look pretty. Like, hey, what's up? What's going on?
But you don't do it in that way. But look, you're on a podcast. You have a job that's your field.
Yeah, but it was very, honest. I'm going to say I'm very special because I'm being honest. But it was the way when I went to these social networking meetings, everything was kind of like, hey, what's going on? Like talking, like cheap talk, small talking, a lot of small talking. But in the end, the main purpose was like, give me your number. I need your contact. I don't know how to do that, to build that makeup. So I'm like, I don't know what to say. The way where I am is because we started talking with you, like with a professor's interaction.
Yeah.
Because we had something to talk about. Because we had a topic and interest to talk about.
Yes.
And when the way I reached a newspaper was because I had something they needed. And they just kept texting me like, hey, I need you to do that because we don't have nobody else.
It wasn't because you were...
No, it was because there was something I had, or there was something they needed, something we need to talk about. And that's how I have most of my friends too, because we reach a topic in common to talk about or something like that.
Would you change anything real quick? Would you change anything like immediately in schools to get people to be more outgoing and talkative in class instead of just going right back to their phone?
Yes, I take away, like, don't take away the computers, but do more paper pencil. I love paper pencil so much. Okay, I love it so much. Like, I want to, and also like field trips. Take me on some field trips or what? Because then I can like actually see things and like visualize things and make things more like. Because I need to do it to learn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like make kids dress up and like make kids do things, weird things in class that pertains to the subject or whatever. Because that's, I used to love that stuff in middle school so much.
Okay. Yeah, because we're all still kids, really, right? Mm-hmm. Would you agree with her, Eric?
Yeah, I agree too.
Okay.
Like doing more interactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You have to like force the interaction almost.
Yeah, but I don't like forcing stuff,
it's not like a forcing, it's a need. It's more, there is a context where we can socialize with, like a field trip, right?
Yes.
Some other more activities. I mean, the class discussions are good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, imagine sitting like 30 kids on a bus. They have to sit next to somebody. They have to talk to somebody.
Exactly. All right. I've got good ideas for my next semester, thanks. Awesome discussion, you guys. We'll see you next time.
Okay. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sociological POV.
Thank you for your time.
This podcast is featured as a part of LCC Connect,
a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College.
To listen to this episode on demand
or explore other LCC Connect podcasts,
visit lccconnect.com.
We hope you'll join us again
on the Sociological POV
as we explore
the good,
the bad,
and the world around us.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcast on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.